This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Today we're talking to an old friend of Dreamland's, Eben Alexander, and also Karen Newell. They have written a book together, Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness, and the most important single issue of our time, as we will discover. Eben was last on with us in 2015, talking about Proof of Heaven. He also gave a wonderful presentation at the last Dreamland Festival. Welcome to you both, and thank you so much for coming on Dreamland.
Whitley, thanks a lot. It's a joy to be here.
Thank you, Whitley. Hello.
Well, hello, Karen, and it's good to have you here. Now, even before we start, why don't you quickly remind our listeners of what happened to you? Eben had a very serious case of encephalitis that nearly killed him, and in fact left him essentially with no functioning brain for days. But when he came out of it, he discovered that his brain actually, or something, not his brain, had been functioning. What was that like, Eben?
Well, I think it's important to point out for your listeners, I remind them that I'm a neurosurgeon. I had spent 54 years of my life honing my view about the nature of the brain, mind, and consciousness. Thought I had some understanding of all that. And it all shifted very dramatically back in early November 2008. And I woke up with severe back pain. Soon realized I had a horrific headache. And within an hour or so, I was just having seizures and was driven deep into coma. That's when my family called 911, and I was taken off to the hospital emergency room. And it turns out that my doctors there faced a real strange enigma, because I was extremely ill with a very advanced case of bacterial meningoencephalitis that absolutely should have killed me, according to my doctors. And I stayed in coma for a week due to that disease. And my doctors estimated when I started that week that I had about a 10% chance of survival. But by the end of that week, when I was not responding to antibiotics, had not shown any sign of neurologic improvement at all, they thought I basically was down to a 2% chance of survival with no chance of recovery. And that was really where on day 7 of my coma, they recommended that they just stop the antibiotics and let nature take its course, which, of course, was devastating news for my family. And it was soon thereafter, later that day, that I started coming back to this world. But my doctors were right. My brain had been absolutely savaged by this illness. So, in fact, all through my NDE experience deep in coma, as well as when I was first coming to in that ICU bed on day 7 of coma, I had no memories whatsoever for Eben Alexander's life. In fact, my words, my language, all religious beliefs, all my semantic scientific knowledge of more than 2 decades working as an academic neurosurgeon, every single bit of it was gone completely. Scientists would be very quick to tell you that once you get straight the medical details of my story, I should have had no experience at all. Any experience that I had, and this was one humdinger of an experience, completely violates what we think we know about brain, mind, and consciousness, because modern neuroscience would postulate that all of the details of conscious awareness for a human being since before we were born depend on at least some part of the neocortex presenting details of conscious awareness to us. And yet my neocortex was so effectively dismantled by this disease, as my doctors knew well from the medical evidence in my case, that I could have had no hallucination or dream or drug effect. I should have had no experience at all. And that's why I'm often asked to speak to medical and scientific groups about this, because it really violates everything modern neuroscience tends to believe about brain, mind, and consciousness. Now, for me personally, the most important part of the journey is that as my neocortex was being dismantled by this very primitive and aggressive meningoencephalitis, my conscious awareness actually expanded tremendously. The world I encountered was far more real than this murky, dreamlike world of our conscious shared awareness, our consensus reality. And that part was a real mystery to me to try and understand until I dove deeply into the NDE literature many weeks after my coma, after I'd written down 20,000 words to explain my, or to at least describe my experience. Only then did I dive deeply into NDE literature and came to realize the similarities of the journeys far outweigh the differences. But it's shocking that more than half of NDEers talk about the ultra reality of that realm. And I would say that's because the brain normally works to filter our consciousness, reduce it down to this apparent trickle of this little limited version of a here and now. Whereas in these journeys, we have a much broader opening to universal mind and the collective mind, to that consciousness at the core of all of emerging reality. And that's why they're so hard to put into any kind of words. But in a nutshell, that was the journey I went on. And I describe it much more in Proof of Heaven, but basically starting with an earthworm's eye view, primitive course unresponsive realm, but then, of course, a spinning white light, a pure musical melody that serves as a portal up into that rich, ultra-real valley, the gateway valley that I describe, that beautiful girl in the butterfly wing, all the souls dancing below, an ultra-real world that has many earth-like features, but also deep spiritual features. All of the joy and festivities in that realm were fueled because swooping orbs of angelic choirs up above were emanating anthems, chants, hymns that would thunder through me and enliven this entire scene. And yet that was only a stepping stone to higher and higher levels, as I described, all the way out to the core realm, an infinite inky blackness, identity with that pure oneness, where the entire higher dimensional multiverse was presented to me as this complex oversphere, as part of the lessons I was to learn. And then cycling through those realms multiple times to try and get a deeper understanding of it all. And it's just shocking to even entertain those kind of journeys. But, of course, what I like to share now and what Karen and I do with our new book is help people to go on that journey with us, because you don't need to have an NDE, be smoked down by meningitis or what have you, to come to know all of this. As a conscious, sentient being, you can come to know everything I know and more about these realms by going within. And that's the effort of our latest book, is to invite so many others along on this same journey of discovery.
And it's why living in a mindful universe is so important, because it tells you that you can do it. This belongs to everybody. Karen, if I may ask, you are a Karen Newell, for those of you who do not know her work, is a wisdom seeker. She has explored many realms of consciousness. She is the co-founder of Sacred Acoustics and teaches how to enter and engage with the very expanded awareness that Eben is talking about. Her website is sacredacoustics.com. Eben's is ebenalexander.com. And I might add that I dropped the ball a little bit as I introduced Eben. I was too excited. He was an academic neurosurgeon for 25 years, including 15 at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Children's Hospital, and the Harvard Medical School. He's also the best-selling author of Proof of Heaven and The Map of Heaven. So, and a friend of mine and of this website, as are they both. Now, we're going to get into exactly what is going on here. The scientific paradigm is changing, I would say profoundly, but we're going to do that right after this break for Free Dreamlanders.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004 and contains nearly 700 episodes. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world. Help keep us on the air by subscribing to unknowncountry.com today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab on the right side of the masthead. Dreamland, where wonder is spoken.
I want to tell you a little bit about my book, The Path. It came to me very suddenly one day in the mid-70s, before I had had any close encounter experiences or was even very much aware of any of this. I was in the Gurdjieff Foundation at the time, and I was fooling around with a deck of tarot cards, and suddenly this remarkable path emerged, and I understood the cards deeply. I grabbed on to the idea and put it down on paper. I'm actually holding the paper I put it down on in my hands right now, now an old yellow piece of typing paper with notations all over it. And it eventually became the path, a lay of the tarot cards that shows the path of life. And it's in the little book, The Path. It's now available as an ebook. You can go and get it on Streber.com or on Amazon.com. Just search on The Path, Streber, and it'll come up, or anywhere ebooks are sold. It's $3.99. And if you do get it and you have any questions, please write me at Whitley@Streber.com, and I'll be glad to engage with your questions as best I can. As time goes on, I begin to see the path more and more as a really important contribution in my body of work. It's not about using the cards for divination exactly. It's more about using the cards to understand in a very deep way how to live the path of life. It's something that more and more I find myself going back to. There's a lot of value there, I feel. So go take a look at Streber.com, The Path. We're back. We're talking to Eben Alexander and Karen Newell. Their new book, Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness. Eben's website is ebenalexander.com. Karen's is sacredacoustics.com. And Karen, we're going to go kind of back and forth here. I want to ask you exactly what Sacred Acoustics is.
Well, Sacred Acoustics is an audio technology that you listen to with regular headphones. We recommend headphones because embedded in the technology is something known as binaural beats. And this is brainwave entrainment technology. We include binaural beats, but also some other types of brain entrainment technology in combination. But this really helps people to do all kinds of things. Now, my initial attraction was when I was learning to meditate. I could not get my monkey mind to keep quiet, and it was very distracting. And I found that certain sounds would help to settle that constant chatter. But people use these tones for all kinds of reasons. Eben uses them to get back to the realms he experienced during his near-death experience while he was in coma. Other people use them to achieve creative inspiration or better focus when they're studying. Others have used them to connect with the souls of departed loved ones, which I know is something very interesting to you, Whitley. And yes. Yet everyone has a different reaction when they first listen to the tones. Some people use them to have out-of-body experiences or just to get a good night's sleep. So this is the technology that we offer, and our focus is to help people grow spiritually. There's many applications of the tones, but what we want to do is wake people up, get people in a habit of going within so that they can really interact with that consciousness that we're all a part of. And the way to get there is possible through the tones. Now, I also have a lot of focus on the heart. The heart is a very useful tool. The brain, you know, seems to control everything in our bodies, but the heart has a very powerful role as well. And in combination with the sound and awareness of the heart, we can really take people into their own journey of consciousness.
Eben, Karen mentions that you use this technology to get back to the realm you entered during your NDE. Could you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yes, I was first introduced to this whole notion of binaural beats about 2 years after my coma, when I was deep into trying to fathom the mystery of consciousness and understand more about how I could glean some illumination around the nature of the mind-brain connection. And it was suggested to me that binaural beats might be a way in. And the logic behind that has to do with the fact that, as I said a little while ago, my whole journey is one that should be impossible by current neuroscientific definitions and understandings. And that was that extreme astonishment that by having a primitive bacterial infection degrading and destroying and eating my neocortex, the human part of the brain, that in fact what would be the result of that was a great expansion, an ultra reality of conscious awareness into realms far beyond anything I ever imagined possible. And to me, the mystery was that the neocortex serves as the most powerful calculator in the human brain. And that's why modern neuroscience says that some part of the neocortex has to be absolutely involved in any part of our detailed conscious awareness, no matter what it is, since before we were born, that the neocortex plays a crucial role in presenting those details to our conscious awareness. And yet they had medical evidence that my neocortex was completely disrupted. There wasn't any part of it that was still available to do any of that. And yet in that very setting, that's where I had such a robust expansion of conscious awareness. So in other words, taking that model and that experience, I was trying to do something that would basically monotonize or kind of dumb down the information processing in the neocortex and allow my conscious awareness to go free. And that is exactly what I think is going on with these binaural beats. And for those out in this world, especially those who are steeped in kind of scientific materialism, who can't possibly believe that sound could be profoundly important in engendering transcendental states of conscious awareness, I would say just try it. It's amazing what can happen. And what we think is going on here is that these differential sound frequencies are intersecting down in the lower brainstem at some circuits that first evolved in evolutionary neurobiology more than 300 million years ago when reptiles and amphibians first crawled out of the muck. And this very set of circuits we are actually manipulating through using slightly different frequencies to the two ears. And from my point of view, what that is doing is allowing us to set consciousness free. Now, the new scientific model that's emerging about consciousness, replacing that old model that never worked, that is the production model, the idea that the physical brain produces consciousness out of physical matter. No one's ever gone anywhere with that kind of thinking. That's what the hard problem of consciousness is all about. But the new scientific model is one of what's called filter theory. And this is something we elaborate on a lot in our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, is the importance of this filter theory, which basically also takes what the founding fathers of quantum physics, renowned physicists of the 20th century, like Werner Heisenberg and Erwin Schrodinger and Louis de Broglie and Paul Dirac, John von Neumann, Eugene Wigner, and others. They were all trying to tell us that consciousness is fundamental in the universe. And that is, I think, where this is so important to get, is if you put consciousness first, that's a position called metaphysical idealism. And that is exactly where we need to go. This is how I return to my NDE, is by using these differential sound frequencies. I've been using sacred acoustics an hour or two a day for the last 7 years or more. And it's a very powerful mode of recovering my relationship with the beings and entities of that realm. In fact, I've developed fully relationships, for example, with my father that I didn't even discuss in Proof of Heaven because I didn't even know of his presence there. So I've had a much more robust relationship with him. He had passed over 4 years before my coma. And that's a story that I tell in great detail in Living in a Mindful Universe, but it has to do with coming in touch with that universal love, that infinite healing power, that divine creative force at the core of the universe that I would say is at the very core of each and every one of our conscious awareness. That speck of awareness is in essence that deity, that God. And this in no way diminishes the power and the astonishing nature of that divine force at the core of the universe. In fact, I came away realizing that that unconditional love of that creative source has infinite power to heal at all levels. And that is something that one can come to realize through this kind of deep journey into consciousness. When you realize the brain is not the producer of consciousness, but only a filter that allows it in, you realize that by transcending that veil or filter, we can come into a much broader knowing of the realities of our existence, our purpose for being here, and where this is all headed.
Even you, in Proof of Heaven, you talked about a really shocking experience involving a picture of your sister. And I want to kind of reinforce what's being said here with a kind of an empirical a piece of evidence, as it were. Why was that picture so mind-opening?
Well, that of course, bit of a spoiler alert for those who haven't read Proof of Heaven, but it has to do with the fact that the more I read about NDEs after my coma, the more I realized that the guardian angels that you encounter on those journeys are people that are of tremendous importance to you in your life. And my spiritual journey, I came to realize, was absolutely real, especially as I came to see all the medical record evidence for the damage to my neocortex. And yet I also felt in some way cheated, because there was this beautiful girl who was my guide through so much of this journey. I encountered her over and over again. She was my guardian angel on that butterfly wing. Every time I passed through that realm, I encountered her loving reassurance. You are deeply loved and cherished forever. You will be taken care of. You have nothing to fear. And yet I remembered her so perfectly from all that I knew I'd never met her in my life. And likewise, that deep mystery to me, as I read more and more about NDEs, I thought, well, my father should have been there. He should have been front and center. He was the most important influence on my life. He had guided so much of what I did in my life. The very fact I went into neurosurgery, everything about it. And my father had passed over 4 years before my coma. And yet he was nowhere to be found on that journey, at least as I was initially aware of it. And that's why I think NDEs are so important, because they really rock your boat. And all those falsehoods of the belief systems you've harbored your whole life get called into question. And for me, that was a huge part of this, was I had to go back to square one and question everything I ever thought I had come to know about reality and about the relationship of brain and mind. And much of that had to do in the years since then is recovering a much deeper and richer relationship with him. And not only that, further developing the relationship with that loving guardian angel, that beautiful girl on the butterfly wing. And turns out, to answer your question, that whole story gets right back to some of the backstory that I explained in Proof of Heaven, the fact that I was adopted and had been through so much of my life wanting to meet my birth family, the Children's Home in North Carolina always reassuring me that I could forget about it. She had gone on with her life. I should go on with mine. And of course, then my son, a school project in the year 2000, reawakened my interest in it, because he had, from the school project, to go back into family genealogy. And that forced me to write another letter to the Children's Home. And I expected to get the same answer I always got, which is your birth family has left. They're gone from your awareness, so you can forget about them. But that's not the answer I got. In February of 2000, driving down a snowy road up in New England, I got the answer that my birth parents were out there. In fact, they had gotten married. That was a tremendous shock to me. And not only that, but they had had three children, but my youngest sister had already died back in 1998, 2 years earlier. And because of their grief over her loss, it was not a good time to come back in their lives. And so essentially that perceived rejection by my birth mother in February 2000 led me into a dark night of the soul, where I ceased to believe in a loving personal God or the power of prayer or anything about an afterlife for 8 years, up until my coma in 2008. Now, a year before that coma in 2007, walking on Beach in South Carolina, two of my sisters said, "Don't you think it's time you reach back out to your birth family once again?" And of course, my first thought was no, because I realized how that rejection back in 2000 had sent me over the deep end, that dark night of the soul. But in fact, they were right. They realized there was a hole in my being that I could not fulfill by continuing that route. So I reached out to my birth family once again, wrote another letter to the children's home, expecting the same answer, but this time got a very welcoming answer in 2007. So the October 5th, 2007, I found myself walking down a sidewalk in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And for the first time in 54 years, I hugged my birth mother and was hugged by my birth father a few minutes later. I cannot tell you what an emotional and powerful experience that was. The next day, I met my brother and sister. And then in coming months, I met my aunts and uncles in that family. They came to meet my adoptive family, all a wonderful reunion, but in many ways bittersweet, because I always wanted to know more about that birth sister, Betsy, who had died in 1998, 2 years before I found out of her existence. And now my birth sister, Kathy, had promised to send me a picture of her. That picture arrived 4 months after awakening from coma, when I was deep into studying this entire mystery, trying to understand how my journey could have happened. Who was that beautiful girl on the butterfly wing, and where was my father? And when that picture arrived in the mail, all of a sudden, it all came together. And I realized that my birth sister, who I had never known, had been that beautiful girl on the butterfly wing, who I had described in detail to family and friends after emerging from coma. But we all shared the mystery of who in the world was she. When that picture arrived 4 months after coma, I found out, and my other family members realized, oh my God, that's exactly who was there. And that's what started me on this pathway of deep discovery, because it proved the reality of the entire spiritual journey to me.
An incredibly powerful experience. And free Dreamlanders, we're going to take another very powerful experience, a journey into the break. We'll be right back. Listen to some words from one of our longtime subscribers.
As a subscriber of Dreamland for many years, it's been an incredible adventure and truly a Rosetta Stone for so many of the experiences that all of your listeners have had. Please join us. It's a fantastic ride. But I will say that certainly Dreamland does reflect something that I've always known, that man's mind mirrors a universe that mirrors man's mind. And no other place will you get this truth than on Dreamland. Come join us.
Some of the most thrilling, mind-opening interviews ever recorded are in the Dreamland Archive. Open your mind to Sir Lawrence Gardner's brilliant vision of the past. Listen to Russell Targ's phenomenal insights about ESP. Be inspired by Dr. Eben Alexander's stunning near-death experience. Listen to an actual recording from a plane as it was attacked by a gigantic flying disc. Be transported to a new level of inner grace with Whitley Strieber's meditations. Enjoy The Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Secret School, and Superstorm audiobooks, and so much more. The UnknownCountry.com subscriber section. As little as 10 cents a day. Priceless.
We're talking to Eben Alexander and Karen Newell. Their new book, Living in a Mindful Universe, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Heart of Consciousness, which is really very much about how you can get there. You do not need to have an NDE. As my wife, Anne, with whom I am in contact, says, it's easy. And we're going to find out more about that as we go on. Eben's website is ebenalexander.com. Karen's is sacredacoustics.com. And Karen, Eben has a number of times alluded to something that is of central importance in my experience and in my relationship with my wife. And that is that essentially ego is, while not bad, because it is what we use as a social tool to interact with others in this world, it does get in the way when it comes to going beyond. And in fact, drugs like ayahuasca and salvia divinorum anesthetize the ego. And that's why you can see into this other world when you take those, use those drugs. I don't personally use them, but I do know a lot about them. And the question I have for you is, when we are face to face with this problem, I'm in my ego. How do I get out? What's the escape route? I have a feeling you know a lot about this.
Yes. Well, the sound is one of the ways to do it, but that, you know, that it doesn't work for everyone. It works for many, many people, but there's other tools that can be employed. And one of them is to develop the inner observer. Now, this is the part of you that most of us aren't very familiar with. This is the part of you that is neutral, that is separate from that ego, as you say. And the way you start to recognize it is really you go into a state of quiet meditation where you just sit quietly, observe your breath, and then start to notice those thoughts. Now, the observer is the part of you that notices the thoughts. Sometimes we think, oh, the thoughts are, you know, getting in my way. They're getting in my way and they won't stop. But what you can do is just allow them to have their thinking state while another part of you starts to notice them. And that part of you, that's the magic, the part that's separate from the thoughts. Now, that's one of the tools. Another tool is to just move your awareness instead of in your mind where we're used to being, where we think, we constantly think and analyze. Just imagine that your awareness is down in your heart area. And an easy way to do that is just to imagine that your breathing is moving in and out of your heart instead of your mouth. Your lungs are right there behind your heart. You can just imagine that your breath is moving in and out of the heart. And when you start to do these things, move your awareness out away from those thoughts, whether with that observer or into your heart, just any kind of way that you can move out of that thinking mind, you start to realize there is so much more beyond that thinking. We're so used to identifying ourselves with our thoughts, with our behavior, with our ability to analyze, and that's not who we truly are. And so those are some of the ways to get past that.
So we are, that really is not who we truly are. And Free Dreamlanders, we're coming to the end of the free part of the show, and we're going to go on in a few moments and go deeper into the whole issue of consciousness. What is consciousness? Who are you? Where are you? Because you know what? You're actually not Whitley or Eben or Karen or Joe or Bob or Frida. You're somebody else. You're just using that person as your tool with which you address the world around you. But boy, there's a bigger world out there, and there are ways of getting to it that do not involve spinal meningitis or, in Anne's case, a burst aneurysm or anything like that. You can do it. And the beginning of doing it is learning to understand what the difference really is between you and your ego.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Anne Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.